This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch the Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
There's a tradition in tournament play to not talk about the next step until you've climbed the one in front of you. I'm sure going to the state finals is beyond your wildest dreams, so let's just keep it right there. Forget about the crowds, the size of the school, their fancy uniforms, and remember what got you here. Focus on the fundamentals that we've gone over time and time again. And most important, don't get caught up thinking about winning or losing this game. If you put your effort and concentration into playing to your potential, to be the best that you can be, I don't care what the scoreboard says at the end of the game, in my book, we're going to be winners. Okay?
From the heart of Queens to the ears of sports fans everywhere, this is the Sports Kings from Queens. Strap in, because the Kings are in session. Today's Wednesday, May 13th. This is episode 232. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts, Darren and Kevin. Please catch us wherever you get your podcast. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a like, join our pages. If you want to hear from anything we post, give us a shout-out. We'll get back to you. Today we go around the world of sports. We're going to get it going right away. Started off with the Knicks. Take out Philly 4-0. Game four was kind of a blowout, not even close. But we'll go back a little bit. So we left here last Tuesday. Knicks were up 1-0. Game two Wednesday, they win by 6. Game three Friday, they win by 14. And then Sunday, they win by 30. Kev, let's start it off.
The only close game you mentioned in their game two was the defense. They held Philly to 12 fourth quarter points and were able to pull out the only close game they've played really in the last, what, six games, Darren?
Yep. Nothing close down the stretch against Atlanta. And obviously, that was the only close one against Philly.
I mean, the whole series, you know, the defense was great. Maxey, 28 points regular season, 27 a game versus Boston in the last series. Knicks held them to 18 on 43% shooting, 16% from three. That was mostly Bridges and McBride with a little help here and there. But Bridges and McBride both played tremendous defense on Maxey. That allowed them to be very aggressive on Embiid. So we said between Cat and just throwing bodies at them with Robinson and with Hook Porty, nobody else on the Philadelphia offense stepped up. There, nobody else.
And Kev, remember when we were on last week, Anunoby had gotten injured. We weren't sure how they were going to come out and deal with that. And seems like they dealt with that okay.
Okay, yeah.
Once they didn't need him in game three, there was no reason to play him in game four, and they won by 30. You know, so I mean, what are you gonna do?
And offensively, you know, this series, Cat has been running from the high elbow. If you notice the whole series, they've been running a lot of motion offense throughout. Cat's initiating from the high elbow. He averaged 7.5 assists in the four games, too. If he's going to contribute that, that opens up so much more. That lets Brunson not just be isolation, one-on-one. You know, that lets him get a little bit more movement there. He averaged 29-6, shot over 50%. OG, the two games you mentioned, 18-24. Bridges, 17.5 and 60-plus percent from the field. And all the bench production, I mean, this has been, I think, one of the greatest six-game stretches in Knicks history. I don't think I'm exaggerating there.
No, not that.
They've played so well.
I mean, that's the thing, Kev. I mean, you sit there, Alvarado chips in here and there, does a little bit. The one thing I'll take away is that, you know, Towns is going to have to play without fouling, and it seems like Embiid gets in his head a little bit, and so it might just be the Embiid matchup because the two guys clearly have never liked each other. You know, but he seems to, I don't know, shy away from playing physical against Embiid a little bit, and, you know, imagine if he was on the court, you know, how many assists he could have averaged, because he sat a lot, and then they go to the Hacker Mitch, which you brought up last week, G., about this is going to be an issue. And, you know, again, the guy's shooting 50% every single time. I mean, you want to know what the problem with the NBA is? Sitting there watching second quarter and third quarter early Hackamich, where you extend the period, and it's just bad basketball. Nobody wants to see it.
Yeah. And then Philly comes out, Nurse comes out complaining about the foul shooting differential.
Yeah, I mean, they're hacking them on purpose.
you got to chew up the team fouls. Of course, you can send the whole team to the line much earlier than if you don't play Hackenbitch.
No, exactly. And listen, and Brunson is very creative at getting foul calls and stuff like that. And sometimes, you know, he's embellishing a little bit, as you can see. But you know what? I mean, the Knicks were just a far superior team. It really wasn't a series. It was never a doubt. Even in that game two, you just felt like they were going to find a way. No, that was close, but. But I don't know. They were the better team in the fourth quarter, and they were the better team throughout the series, Jay.
And Bridges has played well. I know we were a little shaky with how he was playing. He's really played well, especially this six-game run. Anunoby went down. Shamet played great, played really good in game three. McBride played great in game four. You got the other guy production that you needed from somebody else in his absence. Now you get this extended rest. You hope an Anunoby will be back game one, whenever that starts coming up. But, you know, that game four, 81-57 at the half, it was just out of control. There was nothing to get. Second half was at that point meaningless.
Yeah, McBride 7-for-9 from three. When you get a role player that comes in on the road and hits that kind of percentage, usually the home role players are the guys that do that in these series. And McBride, Hart had 17 and also hit, what, five threes in that game. I mean, there was a lot going on. I mean, the Knicks had everybody contributing, Jake.
They shot 25 for 44 from three-point range, and that's crazy. Yeah. That's 75 points. I mean, that's you're going to win almost every game if you shoot like that. I mean, come on.
No, I agree with you.
And with that performance, the Sixers decide, yeah, we're going to get rid of Daryl Morey. So he's as president of basketball operations. They kept Nurse as a coach.
Well, I think Nick Nurse has won. He won in Toronto, so he's got a track record. And he did beat Boston. So I actually think it's a successful season somewhat for Philly. Coming in as the 7th seed and beating Boston at least gives them some legitimacy. You didn't want to sit there and get embarrassed on your home court. They tried not to sell the tickets to the New York fans. That was a New York crowd in both game three and specifically in game four.
Yep. And now they await the winner of the Detroit-Cleveland series. 2-2, home team series so far. Detroit wins a pair of 10-point games, 1-2. Cleveland comes back, wins by 7-9 at home in games 3 and 4. They're playing game 5 now. Detroit at halftime is up by 8. You know, we're just waiting to see which team the Knicks play. It's going to be, you know, a little bit of rest versus rust at some point here. I think the best thing would be probably if this goes 7 anyway, at least tire them out and, you know, try to get the Knicks to win one of these first two. Well, if they're home against Cleveland, you want them to win both. If they're at Detroit, you want them to split.
Detroit played very well against them during the season.
3-0.
Cleveland's got more depth. I mean, Detroit has the best. I wouldn't say the best player because Spider's great too. Cunningham and Spider are both amazing players. It's going to come down to, you know, guys like Bridges and if OG could be healthy, and that will be the difference. But again, like we said before the playoffs started, anything less than an Eastern Conference championship is a disappointment. We said that before Atlanta, and it still goes through. You made it to the Eastern Conference Final last year and lost. Now you have to take the next step. You got to get to the NBA Finals. And if you're going to get there, you might as well win against these powerful Western juggernauts, Kev.
Yeah. And boy, these Western juggernauts, you know, OKC, wow. If that wasn't impressive, the way they took care of the Lakers, 4-0. First three were no contest. Game four, the Lakers did give them a fight. LeBron, with 20 seconds left, had a shot to give him the lead. He missed it.
Jordan wins
it. And then after a couple of free throws, Reeves missed the game time three with 5 seconds left.
No, absolutely. And
OKC sweeps them. And the other series has been, you know, pretty good so far. When we left, the T-Wolves had stolen game one. The Spurs have come back and won three of the last four. The only game
T-Wolves win was the Wemby getting the elbow ejection on Naz Reid. Great comeback, and Edwards hit everything in the fourth quarter. And if you're not an Anthony Edwards fan, watching clutch shots, and, you know, the one thing the NBA misses now, guys, is the contested two. And Edwards does it really, really well. I mean, nobody does it anymore. Nobody tries to do it. They're just passing for the open shot. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's different than the NBA we grew up with. But Anthony Edwards is able to hit those contested twos. And Spider does it pretty well also in Cleveland, but it's pretty cool to watch.
Yep. And, you know, with Wemby, you know, the game he got ejected the second quarter, like you said, they lost. The other three games, he's put up 19-15. 39-15 and 27-17.
He's 7'6", can hit threes, has a skill level of a point guard. I don't know how you guard him. The only thing he's got against him is that he's skinny. But that's it. I mean, but even that, he's still strong enough. I mean, 7'6".
it's hard.
It's crazy.
Anything else in the playoffs?
No, we just wait and see. You know, we wait a month and a half until the Knicks play the next round, and we'll see how they're doing in June.
Yep. Unfortunate news out of the NBA.
What?
I was going to say, unfortunate news out of the NBA the last couple of days here.
Yeah.
A couple of deaths. Jason Collins, who famously was the first openly gay NBA player, came out in 2013. Died at 47 of brain cancer. 6.5 years with the Nets, then bounced around five different teams. After he came out, finished his last season with the Nets, and was, you know, one of these, you know, ambassador outreach type guys to the LGBTQ community. I think I got that right.
Nope, you said it bad. It's TQ, but you know what? You were close enough. And you know what? Listen, he was a solid, serviceable big man at a time where big men had a little bit of a different role than they do today. You know, him and his twin brother, they had a great career at Stanford. And, you know, listen, he was a solid player for the Nets. He was.
Yeah. Gone too soon at 47.
Absolutely.
And then what was even more shocking, Brandon Clark, currently a member of the Memphis Grizzlies, died at age 29. He was found in his home. L.A. police saying it was possible drug overdose. They haven't officially announced a cause of death yet. Drafted by OKC in 2019 out of Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. Traded to Memphis 2 weeks later. Entire 7-year career with Memphis. First 4 years, he was a very good bench player. Double digits every year off the bench. And then the last 3 years, he tore his Achilles and has only played about 70 games the last 3 years. So hasn't been able to fully recover. And you wonder, you know, he got pulled over last month with some painkiller type medications. And all, you just wonder if these injuries were taking a toll on him.
Absolutely. And
unfortunately, maybe have taken his life.
There was a little bit of a rumor that he was a guy that came out saying the NBA was scripted as well. Let's see what that. I have no idea what that's all about.
Nope, neither do I. Any other NBA?
That's all I got, pal.
Let's move over to the ice. NHL. Three playoff series still going on. Only one that's been decided so far is Carolina. They knocked off Philly 4-0. The other three still in motion. The other in the East is Buffalo and Montreal at 2-2. Kev, let's start there.
Yeah, like I said, Carolina finished off the sweep game four on May 9th, which was Friday night.
Yep.
It's been a while here already. Jackson Blake, overtime game winner, series winner. So that took care of Philly. The other series, Buffalo and Montreal tied 2-2. Buffalo took games 1 and 4. Montreal took games 2 and 3 fairly easily. Game 5 Thursday night. That was sort of a nondescript series, I think, so far.
Well, none of the games have been that close, but they have had a lot of excitement from two teams that Montreal's fan base finally came back last year, got into the playoffs. Buffalo, first time in forever getting in this year. Each team has won a road game, though, with all that.
Yep. Out west, we've got Colorado and Minnesota. Wild 9-6 game one when Colorado won in the 15-goal game. Since then, it's a little bit quieter. Again, all three games so far otherwise have not been close. It's been Colorado with a couple of 5-2 wins surrounding a Minnesota 5-1 win. And game five is in progress. Minnesota scoring 34 seconds into game five on the road, and they're currently up 3-0 in the second.
And they had a goal disallowed, too. They could be up 4-0. It was really a close call, but I agree with the disallow. But on the road in the elimination game, coming out like they did, pretty impressive.
Yep. And the other series, Vegas and Anaheim, they've gone back and forth. Vegas has won the odd games. Anaheim has won the even games. Tuesday night, last night, was Vegas in overtime. Pavel Durofeev was the overtime game winner. I think that was pretty good. Close enough.
As good as you're going to make it, Kev.
That's right. The only way I can butcher games. Game 6, Thursday night.
Quick point on Carolina. They are 8-0 in the playoffs. One of only five teams to go 8-0, okay, in the history of the NHL. Last one was the 1985 Edmonton Oilers. Actually went 9-0, won the cup. Before that, 1969 St. Louis Blues. Wow. They lost in the final, by the way. The 1960 Montreal Canadiens won the cup. And the 1952 Detroit Red Wings won the cup. So it's rarefied air. And, listen, how must it feel to be a Philly sports fan right now? Second round getting swept in both series. They were competitive in the hockey. They really weren't competitive in the basketball. But
yeah,
a little bit crazy with that. Like you said, the Colorado-Minnesota series, haven't had a close game yet, so interesting to see what happens. We've had goalie switches by both teams in that series. Blackwood and Wedgwood, you know, get confused in Colorado, but it's always, yeah, always fun. And goalie changes for Buffalo as well so far. So we'll see how it goes, but the hockey's been good. I mean, Anaheim and Vegas is kind of a fun series, two very fast teams that go up and down the ice very well. Lots of good stuff to watch there, Kev.
Yep. Very, very fun series. A couple of other NHL points. Matthew Schaefer was a guest on Good Morning America Part 3 this morning, and they gave him his dad actually presented the Calder Trophy Award to him for Rookie of the Year. He was unanimous. First time since Teemu Selänne back in 92-93 being a unanimous Calder Trophy winner.
Very impressive.
Topped off just a great year. Already announced he's moving back next year with the Martin family to continue. I mean, why not?
It worked this year. You go back.
I mean, the kid's only got to be 19. You know, it's not like he's much different than 18.
No doubt.
And just one of the note, Toronto fires Craig Berube after 2 years only on the job.
Toronto's supposed to make the playoffs. They pay a lot of money. They have a lot of talent. Supposed to make the playoffs.
Exactly. Any other NHL points, guys?
I think you got us, Kev. I think you covered it all.
All right.
Playoffs moving along. All right. Before we move on, Darren, you got some buried treasures for us?
A few buried treasures for you boys. Just some interesting things. So this week in 1968, Catfish Hunter of the A's was kicked out of the batting cage in a game versus the Twins, and he got pissed off. So he pitched a perfect game and went 3-for-4 from the plate. One of Kev's all-time favorite players, Chipper Jones, just has a special relationship moment for Kevin and his wife. He's the only switch hitter born in the last 125 years to hit 300 from both sides of the plate. I did not know that. Very impressive. Wow. Yeah. I was impressed by that. One more baseball, and then we have a minor league baseball. Only two players in Major League history have had 40 doubles in a season, plus 20 triples in the same season, plus 20-plus home runs in the same season. Any guesses?
Well, one more time, please. 40 doubles?
At least 40 doubles, at least 20 triples, at least 20 homers. One guy you know, one guy you don't. The guy you know is late 70s, early 80s, but he did it in the 70s.
Rice didn't have 20 triples, did he?
He did not. Well, not in the same season. He had 20, had the 40 doubles. George Brett in 1979.
Yeah, 20 triples.
20 triples. Remember, oh, those, remember that surf, though? Willie Wilson would just hit it out there, and it would bounce over everybody's head. He did 20 triples a season. And the other guy was Sonny Jim, the great Jim Bottomley of the 1928 St. Louis Cardinals.
Okay.
I did not know Jim Bottomley, but apparently had one hell of a career. And the last thing, this week in 1999, perhaps the greatest stat line ever for any baseball player. This was Florida State slugger Marshall McDougal. He went 7-for-7 with 6 homers, 16 ribbies, and 25 total bases. All single-game NCAA records. He singled in his first at-bat, but then he homered in the next 6, right?
Wow.
So not only that, though, Kev, more exciting, he hit the home run cycle because he had a whole solo shot, a 2-run shot, a 3-run shot, and a grand slam. So, I mean, he had multiple of a couple, but, you know, they won 26-2. I've never heard of a stat line like this. It blew me away.
Wow.
And that is what I have for you guys today. And while we're, you know, and we're going to get into baseball a little bit, but obviously Bobby Cox will touch on that.
Yeah. No, we're going to start baseball now. So why don't you just touch on it right now?
Well, I'm just saying Bobby Cox passed away this week. Cannot argue with the success he had. Probably didn't win as many World Series for the amount of times he was in the playoffs as you would have thought. But he took a Braves team that was really a downtrodden team. They used to be on TBS. Remember, they started at the Fives. It was like it was the other team we could watch back then. And he turned a team that was kind of an also-ran for many years and made him a perennial power. Obviously, you know, the signing of Maddux and you know, Glavine and the trade for Smoltz, which was huge, and all the other things that they did really helped out. But the Braves were just a regular team in the playoffs every single season. And me and G are Yankee fans. Kev's more of a Met fan. You had to go up against this freaking team every single year. Bobby Cox was a hell of a manager. You know, rest in peace, Bobby. Kev, yeah. Any thoughts? Or Gino, any thoughts?
I had 2 stints with Atlanta, one in the late 70s, early 80s, went to Toronto, bounced around a little bit, you know, and then became GM of the Braves, and then became manager again for 21 years from 90 to 2010. Only one World Series win as a manager. Did win as a coach of the 77 Yankees. So he did have 2, 4-time manager of the year, 162 career ejections, all-time major league record, and he was 4th overall in wins. Only McGraw, La Russa, and Connie Mack were ahead of him.
It's impressive stuff.
So, like I said, great career, 14 consecutive division titles. That's going to be very hard to match anymore. And, you know, you just say sometimes – Braves were a great team for the regular season, just never had the postseason luck or enough postseason success, you know, with only one title.
Yep, agreed.
Absolutely.
All right, we're getting into some baseball. So locally, Yankees with the loss today are 27-17. They are 5.5 back of Tampa Bay. I'm sorry, 2.5 back at Tampa Bay. Mets are at 16-25 playing today. 12.5 back in the NL East. Best record in the AL right now is Tampa Bay at 28-13 before today. Atlanta with 29-13. Kev, want to touch on the Mets a couple of minutes, and then we'll go to the Yankees?
Yeah, Mets 9-game road trip played the equally putrid Angels, Rockies, and a little bit better than Diamondbacks because they're only a few games under 500. Went 5-4 against bad teams. Finally beat somebody they had to beat. Come home, and they recalled A.J. Ewing, which I think was partly to give the Mets fans something to cheer for on Tuesday night. And he delivered in his debut, 1-for-2, triple, 3 walks, 2 runs, 2 RBIs. And though tonight he's already got at least 1 more walk. I mean, so far, you know, in a sample size of about 8 major league at bats, he looks like he can handle the bat a little bit and knows the strike zone.
Absolutely.
Carson Bench, you know, we mentioned a little bit last week, going back to April 23rd, that's 17 ball games now, 309 average, 356 on base, 491 slugging. And these guys have averaged, you know, up to about 215 going into today, which again, you know, compared to 136, where it was 17 games ago, is a big improvement.
He's starting to hit.
Yeah. And they've gotten the last couple of games. They've got him leading off, getting him in front of Bichette and Soto. Soto at the leadoff spot. That certainly wasn't a successful experiment there. He slumped badly on the road trip. And last night, because he refused to slow down his swing and not swing as hard as he can every at bat, Francisco Alvarez twisted his knee up last night in the bat. MRI today revealed torn meniscus, out 6 to 8 weeks.
Well, the thing is, the team seems to play well when Torrens is in there. I'm not trying to say it is a bad thing, and Torrens might be exposed playing too much, but it's not like nobody runs on him. I mean, he's really good. Not that Alvarez is a bad player. Alvarez is a really nice young player. He just hasn't matched that first season that he had. And now you're just sitting there, you know, sitting there watching Torrens. And when Torrens is out there, it just seems like the team has a different feel on the hill and throwing out runners.
How many times do you see a backup catcher being a Gold Glove finalist?
Yeah, no, it's rare.
That's how much he shuts down the running game. And calls a good game back there. He's terrific behind the plate. He's got to hit 200. We know that. He's got to bat ninth. Maybe he can hit 220. Sanger's going to be the backup for now. And, you know, Alvarez, first couple of weeks, looked like he was starting to hit the ball a little bit better, you know, a little bit smarter at bats. The last few weeks, he's been back to that, I'm going to swing as hard as I can. And wild swings, and it caught up to him. Unfortunately, this kid is hurt every single year.
It's the way it works.
And to me, that's the state of the Mets.
Okay. Gotcha. Darren, want to talk about the Yankees a couple minutes?
Yeah, I mean, tough weekend against Milwaukee. The offense wasn't going really that much. I mean, listen, here's the thing. The Yankees' offense has been Judge, Rice, and Bellinger. And when those three guys aren't doing it, and Caballero, I'm sorry, that'd be an insult to Caballero. And when those guys aren't doing it, there's really nobody else that's above 200 really on this team right now. I mean, you know, it's been a struggle getting everybody going, and you know, it's been masked by how good Rice has been. You know, it's really been impressive, and you know, the same thing with Judge. You know, with the power numbers already, with the was he have 16 homers already? I mean, so you know, a lot of good things happening with that. Starting pitching continues to be pretty strong. I know you always tell me, Gino, everybody has a bad bullpen. But we're right up there with everybody else right now. It's hard to like much of what you see. Hedrick's been probably the best, most consistent guy besides Hill in there. And, you know, Doval just hasn't found it. Bird has not been good since they brought him in. Bednar's been okay. They have all the starters seemingly coming back right now. Spencer Jones call up, little excitement, I guess, but didn't do a lot at the plate yet, but we'll see what happens there. And Tampa keeps winning. So therefore, you know, Yankees slip ups like they had over the weekend and lost today with the potential injury to Max Fried, by the way. So we'll have to wait and see how those results come back. A lot of things going on again. You know, it's May baseball, you know, so you can't overreact too much. But at the same time, you just want to see these live arms in the bullpen start missing bats. I want to see Doval be the guy that we think he should be. Has the stuff to be a guy that should be an eighth inning lights out guy. And we just don't get it right now. And hopefully he finds that way. And, you know, I don't know, you know, Grissom hitting 178, a lot of guys struggling at the dish, G.
Don't like hearing left elbow posterior soreness.
Not at all.
with Fried. Rodon coming back. Okay, so, you know, is this, are we trading one starter for another on the injury list? It could be. That when I hear that, when I hear them state that on an injury update, that doesn't sound good at all. That never sounds good.
No.
You know, listen, for a team that's, you know, 27-17, they haven't looked good the last, you know, whatever you want to call it, week, 6 days, whatever. They really have not gotten a lot of good production except for three or four guys.
That's it. The four guys I mentioned. Everybody else,
it's been really spotty. I mean, you've had, you know, a game or two from Grisham, from Chisholm, from McMahon is like nothing. Spencer Jones has come up and done nothing bat. You know, Esquerra and Wells can't do nothing behind the plate. You know, Volpe came back today with Caballero going down. Volpe was 0 for 3 today. Bullpen really hasn't pitched well at all. You know, I got nothing. The problem I have is they're still 27-17. I don't want to start like thinking like I'm in panic mode, but you know, I like to see great, a couple of guys
starting pitching. I mean, and Fried getting hurt is a little nerve wracking.
Yeah,
he's been a big part of that.
Like to see a couple of guys hitting 250 and not 200, but okay. I mean, you know,
yeah. I mean, it's tough to watch the bottom of this lineup right now because you feel like everything happens in those 2, 3, and 4 spots right now, and that's what we're seeing. Rice has been amazing. We didn't know what we were going to get from him. He's gotten off to a really good start. Judge, we knew what we were going to get from him as long as he stayed healthy. Bellinger's been, you know, the professional hitter he's always been outside of one or two down years when he was with the Dodgers. But he's, for the most part, he's been a solid citizen everywhere he's been. So, hey, yeah, we're going to find out.
Stanton went down with an injury. Caballero went down with an injury. You took two guys that actually were hitting a little bit out. So we got to see how this is going to play out. Any other baseball points, guys?
Yeah, one more tonight to keep an eye on, too. Soto, second at bat, fouled one off the ankle.
Oh,
he did think it's third at bat, but here in the bottom of the eighth, they've had Melendez now pinching in for Soto. So that just is something to keep an eye on if that's a bad break or not for the Mets.
That could be precautionary, though, Kev.
That's what you're hoping for.
You know.
Yep, he was DHing, so, you know, he's sitting on the bench and just sort of stiffens up after the foul ball. We'll see. Darren, you mentioned the bad bullpens. Mm-hmm. I saw a stat yesterday. I think everybody's looking for saves. Everybody's looking for a closer. Everybody's trying different guys. Going into yesterday's games, 118 relievers have saves this year. There's only 30 teams. We're a month and a half into the season. 118 relievers have saves. 2009 season, 124 relievers had saves.
For the whole year?
For the whole year.
We're a month and a half in.
I know part of it's the way the games change, more relievers, more this, more that, but almost as many pitchers have saves this year as the entire 2009 season.
Wow.
So, yeah, everybody's struggling to find relief pitching.
It's really crazy.
That's some bad bullpens, let me tell you.
Yeah,
no doubt about it.
Wow. All right. Kev.
So I've got some treasures.
Got some treasures for us.
Well, I'm the treasure. You're the gem. I'm sorry.
You got some gems for us, Kev. Yeah,
that's right. I've got some gems here. So we talked about bad bullpen, but here's one example of a guy who's actually been lights out this year. Rico Garcia. I don't know if you've seen the type of season he's putting together.
Well, he's career, on my fantasy team, so career, yes, I have.
Career ERA over 5. Last year, he was one of these guys that the Mets kept bringing up, DFAing, pitched a couple of games, went to the Yankees for a game, got rocked, got released, went back to the Mets. Actually did okay for the Mets in the 8 games. This year for Baltimore, 3-0, 0.47 ERA, 19 innings, 7 walks, 22 strikeouts, 1 hit. It was a home run. 64 batters faced, 1 hit. That's an .018 batting average. That's the best start to a season by any reliever, 1 for 64. The only other guy who's matched it was Miller from San Diego.
He's been outstanding, too.
Unbelievable how you get these guys that just appear out of random sometimes.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, but whatever, right?
Yep. And Darren, I apologize for this one I'm bringing it up here in advance.
No problem.
353 batters have hit home runs this year. A couple of guys, big names, have zero or not big at bats.
I know one of them.
Chandler Simpson. Chandler Simpson leads the way, 156 at bats, no home runs. But he had none last year in 414 in his rookie year, so you don't expect him to hit home runs.
Absolutely.
Second is Luis Arraez, 155 at bats. He's got 36 and 3,400 career at bats. So, the fact that he has none yet, fine. Fourth place, Nick Gonzalez with 140 at bats. He's got 14 and 1,000 career at bats. So, again, guy who doesn't home runs. The one shocking name in there, Darren, I know you're going to say it.
Mr. Tatis.
Mr. Tatis, 147 at bats going into today, no home runs.
It's crazy, isn't it?
He's hitting the ball hard.
But he's just not getting out of the yard.
I mean, it's amazing. The guy averages one home run every 17 at bats. Here he is, 147 at bats into the season, hasn't hit one yet.
It's crazy. Really, you expect him to hit 30, and right now he's on pace to hit zero. So we'll see how that goes.
And my strange boss score, nothing's really been up the last week. So I went back 100 years.
Why not?
So back 100 years ago, when no lights were in the stadiums, if teams played, if the umpire called for darkness, it was a tie game. Game was called, no result. Stats counted, but the game was replayed in its entirety if needed. Back then, you have to worry about 18 teams making the playoffs. It was one team making the playoffs or making the World Series, so it was fine. April 30th, 1919, the Brooklyn Robins, as they were known at the time, not the Dodgers at the time, they tied the Phillies 9-9 in 20 innings.
Okay.
Burley Grimes, Hall of Fame pitcher, started for Brooklyn, won all 20 innings. Gave up 9 runs, 8 earned. And a guy by the name of Joe Oster for Philadelphia Phillies also went 20 innings. Gave up 24 hits, the same 9 runs and 8 earned. Fast forward 1 year later, almost to the date, May 1st, 1920. Brooklyn played Boston, 26 innings. Game ended 1-1. In fact, it only took 3 hours and 50 minutes to play 26 innings. It was 1-1. Leon Cador for Brooklyn, all 26 innings, 15 hits, 1 run. Not good enough. For Boston, different team, but believe it or not, Joe Oster also pitched against Brooklyn that day, went all 26 innings, 9 hits, 1 run. Again, not good enough.
No Harvey Haddix is out there throwing no hitters into the 15th.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
But I thought it was just funny. You see two long games like that, 4 starters, 4 complete games, but the same guy pitches 2 20-inning-plus games.
Two different teams, no less.
Two different teams against the same team, Brooklyn. That was my weird box score of the week also.
That's awesome.
All right. Let's move over to a little golf. So the PGA Championship, the 108th PGA Championship starts tomorrow at Aaron Mink, is that how we say it, Kev? Aaron Mink Golf Club outside Philadelphia.
Yep.
Scottie Scheffler installed as the favorite going in.
Shocking.
What do you got, Kev?
156 players competing for the Wanamaker Trophy, largest field of any of the majors. First time they played here since Gary Player won in 1962. Wow. Well, it was alive last time they played the PGA at Aronimink or however.
Aronimink. That sounds good, Kev.
Of course, the favorites, Scotty and Rory, a couple of the favorites. Cam Young's playing real well.
Absolutely.
One of the stories is going to be Jordan Spieth, still looking for the career Grand Slam. The PGA is the only one he hasn't won. Matt Fitzpatrick, a 3-time winner this year. He's got, he's playing good form here. You've got Ronnie DeChambeau And any of the big hitters are going to be in contention because they've got wide fairways there, not many trees, a bunch of bunkers that, you know, you hit these long shots that, you know, sometimes you're looking for the bunker. And, you know, I think, you know, the rough so far, you know, they did some reports from the fairway there. The roughs are not looking too bad. They're not too thick, not too penal. So these could be some really low scores and some of these big hitters, you know, Scotty, Rory, Rahm, DeChambeau all have a big chance here. And one of the dark horses for me, I think, you know, he's about 60-1 going in. How about a guy like Chris Goddard? He's got two wins during the season. And hasn't shown up yet in the majors, but, you know, if you want a longer shot, maybe Chris Goddard has a chance here. Otherwise, you can play one of the other guys who are going to be big favorites.
Chris Goddard plus 445 to be in the top 10.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
All right.
Dan, what are you looking forward to the PGA?
Well, I mean, PGA, usually the scoring is, you know, it's not the Open, all right? They're not trying to crush you.
Yeah.
It's not Augusta in April where anything can happen. It's not the Open Championship where wind can kill you. So usually we do see scores where your winners are in that minus 15, minus 13, minus 16 range on a regular basis. I mean, you know, listen, you expect the big-time guys to be the big-time guys, so to speak. You think DeChambeau maybe takes a step forward here after having such a disappointment last time out, not making the cut at Augusta, you know. But a guy I look for that, you know, maybe a little bit off the pace here, you know, Ricky Fowler played really well last week.
He did.
I'm going to see if Ricky Fowler can make a little run. Another guy I like is Tyrrell Hatton. Those are the two guys. I think Tyrrell Hatton's always like, he's a feisty guy in these type of tournaments. He's a tough out. He could miss the cut, but he also could be there on Sunday. So what do you think could happen with a guy like that, Jake?
Top 10 finish, Ricky Fowler, plus 375. Tyrrell Hatton, plus 395, top 10 finish. So that's two good ones. And if you put them together, you can get plus 2,200 on that, Darren.
I might have to do that just for the old proverbial shits and giggles, as they say.
Yeah. A couple of Kings ransom bets with this. So I like picking those top 10 finishes, put a couple of golfers together. If you take Scheffler and Xander Schauffele together, plus 280. You take Bryson and Colin Morikawa, plus 1,100. Kev, you mentioned these two, Cam Young, Matt Fitzpatrick, plus 600. And how about taking three of the favorites in this and putting them together, Scheffler, Rory, and Oberg, plus 750.
It kills you to say Oberg, doesn't it?
I gave it to you on the button right on the first shot. You know, you mentioned excuse me. I'm sorry. JJ Spawn plus 455 top 10. I like that. I think that's a long shot. He could sneak in there in a top 10 finish and get you some good money. So I'll look for that one out there. Kev, any other points?
I was going to say also maybe a Koepka. He's a three-time PGA winner. He finished tied for 12th of the players, tied for 13th of the Masters. So he's been right there near the top 10. He's plus 305 on DraftKings, plus 3,700 to win. You know, maybe he finally thinks about breaking through here.
That could be. That's nice, man. Put a couple of those together, you can hit something, Kev.
Yep.
All right. That's the golf. Darren? We also have a second horse race in the Triple Crown this week.
So you try to break down the Preakness and you feel like you're watching an allowance race at Aqueduct in the sixth race for $40,000. I mean, this is like maybe the weakest field I've ever seen in a Triple Crown race in my life. And that's a lot, okay? And Kev likes horse racing as much as I do. That's a lot. I mean, this is a 14-horse field, which you also don't see at the Preakness generally. If it goes above 10, it's a big deal. I'm going to pound through these guys relatively quickly here and just give you a little bit of an idea on them. The one horse is Taj Mahal, G. Sheldon Russell is the jockey. Brittany Russell's the trainer. 5-1 odds. 3-for-3 lifetime. All three wins at Laurel. Just remember that. This is at Laurel this year, not Pimlico. They're doing work on the track. So also a place where we've seen, you know, $3,000 claimer races is the host track for, you know, for the Preakness. So it's a little different. The two is Ocelli, still a maiden. And Gino remembers back in 1888 when, who was the winner on that one? Refund was the winner in 1888. Last maiden to win the Preakness.
I missed him in my exacta.
You should have had him. I don't know how you missed it. Finished third in the Derby, closed very well. Tyler Gaffalione and Donnie Van Hamel. The thing about this horse is there's a lot of speed in this race, and this horse is a closer, so you have to consider him, okay? The three is Crupper. You get Junior Alvarado and I'm sorry, that's Van Hamel. The two was Beckman was the trainer. I'm sorry. This is a 30-1 shot that doesn't belong in the race. I'm sorry. It done nothing that would make me think anything where he belongs. Gino, Kev, like something about him?
Crupper belongs in the crapper.
Oh my God! This is not a good horse right now. Here, the four is Robusta, right? 31 did not show up in the Derby really, and hasn't showed up in a while. So you get O'Neill and Bejarano, which is nice, but this horse doesn't belong either. G. The five is Talking, interesting horse here, and I know he's 20-1. They get the change up from Rosario to Irán Ortiz, which to me is a nice jump. Danny Gargan's a good trainer. Great as a two-year-old. Not great as a three-year-old, but third race off the layoff. A little better last time out. This is a horse you keep in your exotics, Gino, I'm telling you. The six, Chip Honcho. They get, what's it called? They get Jose Ortiz aboard and Asmussen, maybe the most accomplished trainer in the race. 5-1 on this horse. Look good in the Risen Star. He's a speed horse. There's about 10 speed horses in this race. I'm going to try to figure out who gets the lead. Whatever. The seven, The Hell We Did. The hell we, you know, it's not going to happen. Luis Saiz, Todd Fincher finished second in the Lexington, but was well beaten in that race. Another speed horse trying to get out. Not impressive. He's going to have to stalk. He's never had to do that before, whatever. 8, Bull by the Horns. It's a metaphor. You get it goes back to dirt. This horse has gone back and forth. You get a Joseph Safi with Micah Husbands as the jockey. This horse has been dirt, turf, not impressive in either one, really. I don't get it. 30-1. The 9 is the favorite, the very heavy 9-2 favorite. Iron Honor. Never won at two turns before. 0-1 when he's run at two turns. It was beaten pretty badly. Does go with the Flavian Prot. Has Chad Brown. Blinkers are off. So they're trying something a little different. I think they're going to try to bring this horse back and have him make a run late. This is the favorite, and it's a horse that has not been impressive lately, but we'll see. The 10, Napoleon Solo. Paco Lopez and Chad Summers. Another horse, great as a two-year-old. And then 5th in the Fountain of Youth. 5th in the Wood. You know, I mean, it's like another speed horse has to get out, you know, of 9 others. The 11, Corona de Oro, I'm sorry. Johnny Velasquez and Dallas Stewart, also 30-1. Another speed horse. We'll try to go out to the front. Again, a lot of speed. The 12, Incredible. Wasn't going to run in this race, but saw how bad the field was. Said, I'm going to take a shot. And you know what? You can't really blame him. He wasn't that bad in the Derby. Finished 6th. Riley Mott says, I'm taking a shot. Jaime Torres aboard, 5-1. He comes in off the pace again in a speed race. So this is a horse you have to consider. 13 is Great White. You remember him before the race? Of course you do. He threw the jockey, right? But Alex Achard is back on anyway. John Ennis brings him in, 15-1. Another speed horse coming from the 13. And the 14 is Pretty Boy Maya. Ricardo Santana, Jeremiah Engelhart, 15-1 in the morning. Horse has only won 2 races at Aqueduct. One was a maiden special weight, but again, this is not a horse that has ever run the distance. He's speed, and he has to start from the 14. Kev, I don't even know if I've ever had a handicap a race that was for a triple crown. I mean, listen, this would be fun I'm at Saratoga and it's the sixth race and they're running an allowance. But this is crazy right here. I mean, you're going to make money. If you can get the right combination here, you're going to make a ton of money.
Yeah.
You guys have, Kev, who do you like? Who do you think wins it?
Like you said, the incredible thing is you've got about 10 speed horses out of 14.
It's amazing.
So, you know, even if two or three of them decide to hold back, you've got half the field trying to gun for the lead. And, you know, so you look at those 10 horses, you know, the three best are obviously Taj Mahal, Chip Honcho, and Iron Honor. So those are three you sort of keep around. For the closers, I don't like Bull by the Horns. The other three have a shot here. Ocelli, the thing that gets me is that he still hasn't won.
Yep.
He still has to learn how to win. Twalkin, you know, 20-1 in this field, morning line.
You get the jockey upgrade, which you like, right?
You like the upgrade there. Second in the Champagne, third in the Bluegrass, but no competition in the Remsen or the Tampa Bay Derby.
Nope.
Incredible. You know, Jaime Torres won 2 years ago with Seas of the Gray. I'm picking Incredible to give Jaime Torres his second Preakness win in 3 years. I think, you know, the exotics, you've got to get some sort of combination. Like I said, the three front runners, pick two of the three there and throw Talking in, especially if Talking's going to be about 21, if he's anywhere that way. Like I said, I don't see any of these other horses, some of these long shots, except for Talking. I don't see any of the other long shots really having much of a chance. I mean, these are bad horses.
I mean, these are horses that were sitting there celebrating fifth and sixth place finishes in prep races.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not talking about, I mean, Incredible, at least we say sixth in the Derby. He came with everybody else. He just wasn't as good, but nobody's running. I mean, it's a tough race. Gino, any thoughts on who you like here in the Preakness?
So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a $2 exacta box, and I'm going to put four horses in there.
Mm-hmm.
One's going to be Incredible. The second one's going to be Taj Mahal. The third one's going to be Ocelli. And the fourth one, and I picked one of the ones that is out there, and it's going to be The Hell We Did.
All right.
And that's going to be – and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a $2 exacta box. It's going to cost me $24. I'll probably wind up taking the other $6 and doing some kind of trifecta box for a buck or whatever with three of the horses. Probably not The Hell We Did. Put the other three horses there. You know, a 50-cent trifecta box and try to hit something with that. And that's what I'll probably do with, you know, $30.
It's so hard to like the speed horses here because you don't know who's going to get it.
Yep.
I'm going to pick a speed horse that's a bit of a shot. I would probably take Napoleon Solo. And even though I think that Chip Honcho is probably the better horse, I just think that Napoleon Solo and Corona Del Oro are both going to run for that lead. So I'm going to keep him in my exotics. I also like Kev. I think Incredible finds a way to come and close and win this thing. I do think that Taj Mahal being the speed on the inside always makes me nervous in a 14-horse field, so makes me a little bit more nervous. I'm going to take the 12. I'm going to put the 12 on top of the 5, the top of 5, 9, and 10. So we're going to see what happens here. But this is – I mean, this horse racing has to do something. If you want to space out the races more, you want to say, okay, we're not doing the 2, 2, 3, fine. You want to say we're running the Preakness third and we're going to run it because they won't move the Belmont past June. So you want to say you're going to run the Preakness in July, fine. I don't really care anymore. Simple fact is it should be mandatory that if you win the Derby, you have to run for the Triple Crown because the sport needs this. The sport can't afford to have this field in the Preakness. Now, someone's going to win some money. Even if you got the three favorites, you're going to win money in a triple. Two favorites, you're going to win money in an exacta. But this is just disgusting. But anyway, I digress, Gino. And that is
– even the two favorites might pay $40 for the exacta.
Yeah, I think it could pay more than that. I think it could pay closer to 50. And that's how crazy it is. And that's where we sit, guys. So you put a $5 exacta on there, you got a chance of you'll be $100 plus.
All right. Any other points we want to touch on? I got one. College basketball, the NCAA approved the field going to 76 teams. We hate it. We can't stand it. And enough about that. Kev, you got some NFL stuff?
Couple things. NFL, locally, New York Jets. Breece Hall, 3 years, maximum $45.75 million. I think about 43 of it was there, $29 million guaranteed. Fourth highest average for a running back behind Saquon, McCaffrey, and Derrick Henry. Just ahead of Kenneth Walker III. I mean, when guys like Gibbs and Bijan come to do, they'll pass Breece Hall. But, you know, this is a commitment to say, all right, Breece, you're my back. And we're not going to do this, you know, what Glenn talked about last year or the committee or anything like that. This is Breece Hall's team as a running back. And they'll spot in the other guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Braylon Allen's back, you know, and he'll be a factor. But really, it's a three-year deal, but it's 2 years really where all the money is. The third year they can get out if they want to. He's only 24 years old. So even if he plays 3 years, he's 27, still on the right side of 30. He's been a really good Jet. You know, what can you say? I mean, on bad teams, he's been the guy they key on, and he's been really good. Now it's time to sit there and put some talent around this kid.
Yep. And they're working on it.
They are.
They just need a quarterback.
Very true, my friend. Very true.
And the NFL schedules get released tomorrow. There's been some leaks already. They've already announced 9 international games. No Jets, no Giants. Thank God. No, watch them at 9 o'clock in the morning on Yahoo streaming or something like that.
It's ridiculous.
But you know, I mean, my goodness, NFL, you can't give us a freaking break. They're playing the first ever Thanksgiving Eve game. It'll be the Packers and Rams on Thanksgiving Eve. So you got a game Wednesday, 3-game triple header on Thursday, the Black Friday game. College, you know, you got rivalry weekend Saturday, and the more NFL Sunday and Monday. What's this going to do to divorce rates in this country?
I mean, my wife's already teetering. I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. I mean, if I watch UFC, I'm like, if I pick up another sport, she's just going to leave. I can't do that. Plus, I can't stay up late enough anymore. But yeah, it's too much. I don't listen. I love the NFL. We all do. We're all NFL. NFL is the made-for-TV sport. It's outstanding. You can sit there, watch any two teams play. It's not regionalized, even though maybe because we're Jet fans and we're desensitized to the fact that our team never makes the playoffs. But, you know, it's not that kind of sport. But, you know, you can't just have games every single night. You just can't. Yeah. And, you know, it's, you know, I don't know. Even the Black Friday always bothered me because that's a college day. And let the college guys have that day. And I don't know. It just kind of irks me. Gee, I know you have thoughts on 9 international games.
Listen, they're going to do it. I can't wait to hear your thoughts next year when they wind up going to 18 games. So
Goodell wants, I think, an international game every weekend.
That's what's going to happen.
It's just nobody cares. Nobody in this country cares. Nobody's saying, you know, I really was hoping to go to Berlin, so I'm going to go there and watch the Vikings play the Bears. Nobody cares. They'd rather go to Soldier Field or whatever the new stadium is going to be in Indiana or whatever
it may be. But they sell out every one of those games, Darren. Every one of those games they sell out overseas, no matter where they play them.
Yeah, but you don't gain anything from it. They sell it out here too.
No, you do. You gain international attention to your game. You gain sales. You gain everything.
I don't think the international attention to the game does anything for you.
I think you are so far off base, it's not even close.
I don't think it does anything for you. I really don't.
Okay.
It's a few more dollars.
I just don't think it's going to ever pass soccer. I don't think it's going to pass other major sports in those countries. I mean, we're going to be a little bit more well-known, maybe. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like those sports have rich traditions in other sports. I don't know. Maybe it will, but I don't see them making a league in Europe. They tried it, they failed, it ended. You know, so I don't know how long the sustain of that is. But I get your point. I just don't believe in it. I think it's bad for the American sports fan, and they don't really care about that. And that's the problem with the greedy NFL.
You need Netflix, you need Peacock, you need Amazon. You need, yeah, you know, ESPN if you don't have cable.
Of course, you have $1,000 to watch every game.
Of course, you're baseball the same way too.
Baseball, it's everybody. It's everybody. It's the NBA too. It's everybody.
Oh, the NBA with the playoff games on Peacock.
Yeah, it's everybody.
But the NFL's got that interesting little like lawsuit perhaps happening where they're having them look into the fact that they're making it too expensive. Well, we're gonna find out. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why you quit on your base so badly. If you do it enough, eventually some of the base leaves. I'm not saying it's me, because it isn't me. But there's going to be people that are in that base that are going to eventually leave saying, you know, I don't need to wake up at 9 in the morning to watch a sporting event. I really don't.
Yep.
Some people are going to. Some people are not. Some cities are going to sit there and have, you know, barbecues and parties at bars and stuff like that. And some aren't. And we're going to find out how that works. Gino's all in. I'm all against it. Kevin's kind of wishy-washy in the middle.
I don't like the international games. I really don't.
It's always me and Kevin against Gino. You ever notice that? Gino's always the guy that stands alone and says, this is what it's all about.
I don't have a problem with it either way. I just think it's going to happen.
No, I know. I just wish it didn't. But Gino,
let's get going. Let me bring up the Mets schedule maker again.
One last NFL point real quick. Craig Morton passed away this week. He was the first quarterback to ever win the NFC and AFC championship, by the way, but never was the starting quarterback of a Super Bowl winner. Did win a Super Bowl, but was not the starter for Dallas when they did win. Craig Morton played 18 years, did a lot with the Cowboys, did a lot with the Broncos. You know, was a really, really good quarterback. Had great career. Yep. But never was the starting quarterback winning the Super Bowl. But again, great career. Rest in peace, Craig Morton. You guys have anything else you want to touch on before we wrap up this shindig?
Nope.
No, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin here with Gino talking about a wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where we debate for 2 minutes over international football. Who the hell cares? Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. Listen, we're posting a lot on social. Keep liking our stuff. And speaking of that, Kev, say something for us. What do you got?
We've got the Sports Nuts. We are going to be on the Sports Nuts podcast on Friday night.
I'm sorry, repeat that. I talked over you. Go ahead.
Sports Nuts, Friday night, 8 p.m. Look for our social media posts. We'll tell you where to find us. We'll tell you how to listen to us.
Yeah, the Sports Nuts are on a bunch of radio stations. They have a huge following in social media. We're excited to be joining them. We're going to be on from 8 to 8:20, talking a little NBA and a little NHL. We're real excited about it. I totally forgot, but Kev remembered, so thank goodness. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.